Penguin Random House Audio presents The Good Virus, The Amazing Story and Forgotten Promise of the Phage by Tom Ireland. Read for you by Ben Deary.
Author's Note. Scattered throughout this book are dramatic examples of people receiving or seeking experimental medical treatments with viruses. These are not intended to represent, nor should they be read as, a body of evidence for the efficacy of these treatments. They are included to help demonstrate what patients and doctors must resort to when our existing antibiotics fail, and why the development of a modern, safe, and clinically proven version of these strange and controversial treatments is so desperately needed. Introduction. Invisible Allies. In the summer of 1942, as German troops encircled the Russian city of Stalingrad, Nazi commanders began to receive bizarre reports of dead bodies disappearing from German field hospitals. In the dead of night, Soviet scouts were crossing the front line daringly to steal certain German corpses before squirreling them back down into a secret underground laboratory hidden deep beneath the city. The Germans had been suffering outbreaks of cholera for weeks as they advanced east towards Stalingrad, and the Soviets were desperate to prevent the disease from crossing the front line. Although this nasty bacterial disease had helped further deplete their enemy, it could also spread like wildfire among the soldiers and civilians crammed into a city under siege. So what on earth were the Soviets doing seeking out potentially infectious German corpses and dragging them into their territory? Even with today's improved sanitation and modern antibiotics, cholera kills over 100,000 people every year. Spread through water contaminated with the tiny tampon-shaped bacteria Vibrio cholerae, if left untreated, it causes debilitating cramps, diarrhea, dehydration, and eventually, shock, coma, and death. Professor Zinaida Yermolyova from Moscow's Institute of Experimental Medicine had been sent by Joseph Stalin to assess the cholera outbreaks on the front and formulate a plan. Like other physician scientists of the era, she had spent her career in a world without effective antibiotics, trying to work out how to kill bacteria like Vibrio cholerae without also killing the people infected with it. In 1942, just one genuine antibiotic substance was known to scientists, penicillin, and they were still unable to produce it in large enough quantities to treat patients. Most treatments for bacterial disease at the time were inconsistent, toxic, useless, or all three. But one way to treat bacterial disease had shown more promise, especially in war, and Yermolyeva had become an expert in deploying it under battlefield conditions. It required cultivating a natural and yet invisible enemy of the cholera bacteria, which she could only find on the bodies of those who had cholera, or were close to those who had it. And so her morbid plan began. She was going to use viruses to kill the bacteria that were killing soldiers. Most people have quite a low opinion of viruses. It's understandable. Viruses make us ill, disable us, or kill us. They spoil our crops and kill our animals. Computer viruses mess up our expensive machines and send emails that make us look like idiots. In 1985, the biologist Sir Peter Medawar famously described a virus as a piece of bad news wrapped in protein. The COVID-19 pandemic has further reinforced the idea that these tiny life forms exist only to spread pestilence, ill health, economic disaster, and death. Perhaps now is as good a time as ever to explain why that view is wrong. I first considered writing a book on good viruses in early 2020. The idea was to celebrate one particularly important but overlooked group of viruses with an intriguing and controversial history, which, fascinatingly, were once used to save lives, but then were largely forgotten. At that point, where I live in the UK, the public health messaging on the novel coronavirus spreading around the world from Wuhan, China, was essentially that if we all just wash our hands more often, then it should all be fine. Like most people, I had no idea how this one extremely not good virus would come to dominate so many lives for so long. And so, I soon found myself writing a book celebrating viruses as the worst viral pandemic in living memory swept around the world. Indeed, much of this book was written while my family and I hid from a virus. I still believe viruses can be, and are, good. Thus, the title of this book is not meant to be provocative or to diminish the immense suffering that viruses have caused and continue to cause us and our loved ones. Viruses kill millions of people every year and cause poor health in even more, whether it be in acute and terrifying infections like Ebola, familiar and ongoing global threats like flu, sexually transmitted viruses like herpes, childhood diseases like mumps, the millions of cases of sickness and diarrhea caused by viruses like norovirus or dysentery, or entirely new pathogens like COVID-19. Our battle with viruses has shaped human history, often tragically. However, the truth is that the viruses that cause us such suffering are vastly outnumbered by viruses that do extraordinary things for us. There are trillions of viruses out there that could actually save lives. There are several types of virus that could be described as good viruses. The harmless viruses used in many life-saving vaccines, for example, and the viruses scientists have developed that infect and kill only tumor cells, known as oncolytic viruses, a promising new therapy for cancer. There are the ancient viruses that became embedded in the genomes of our ancestors, which make us the species we are today. Several crucial genes that all mammals have are derived from viral genes that at some point were assimilated into our ancestors' DNA. For example, genes that help the cells of a fetus connect to its mother's cells in the placenta are derived from a gene that helps viruses fuse with cells. Without this gene, we might still be laying eggs. Another, essential for long-lasting information storage in the mammalian brain, is believed to be a repurposed gene that evolved in a virus to help it encapsulate genetic material. While these old and new viruses and their various functions are fascinating, in this book, I focus on a very special group of viruses known as bacteriophages. These were the viruses Professor Yermolyeva was looking for some 80 years ago in the icy soil around Stalingrad. Bacteriophages, known simply as phages for short, are viruses that infect and kill bacteria. Essentially harmless to humans, they exist solely to inject their genes into bacterial cells, where they can either lurk indefinitely or replicate madly. In the latter case, they cause their unfortunate host's metabolism to go haywire, churning out copies of the virus instead of the materials it needs to sustain itself. When the time is right, the new viruses burst the bacteria open like a popped water bomb and spill out to find new hosts in which to repeat the process. The vast majority of these viruses are so-called tailed phages. Along with a sinister-looking 20-faced head, known as a capsid, these viruses have a distinctive protein tube, or tail, which they use to inject their DNA into their unfortunate host like a tiny syringe. Even finer, spider-like legs fold out from the base of the phage to help it detect and bind to the surface of the bacterial cell, like an unfathomably tiny lunar lander. Footnote: some scientists in the phage community have suggested that the design of the 1968 Apollo lunar module was actually inspired by phages, the lander's squat shape being so similar to stubby-tailed phages known as podoviruses. Confusingly, the two major types of microbes at war in this book, bacteria and viruses, are often grouped together simply as germs, but they are distinct in important ways. The most basic difference between them is that bacteria are cells, and viruses are not. Cells are biology's basic units of life, microscopic capsules with everything needed for life and replication contained within a fat-based membrane and, sometimes, a tough outer wall. All life on the planet, except viruses, consists of cells, either working in concert with one another like the human body, for example, a network of trillions of related cells arranged to form...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?